History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Ashew on the Fan, at Nick Ashew, on all the socials. No excuses, really, for the Commanders this year not to win if they stay healthy. And then that's a whole other conversation. There's no excuses for this team not to be a playoff team. I really believe that. I know some people look at this and go, they lack talent here and they lack talent. They spent the third most money in free agency out of any team in the NFL. Now, they still have over $40 million in cap space, which would have been nice if they could have used it on a wide receiver that hasn't played in a year and a half for a cheap price. But now he's just completely burned all those bridges. So at this point, that's probably not going to happen. But like, it really, like, you look at this roster, they went out and they go and get... I see the potential for serious upside in guys exceeding some of the contracts that they signed, right? Like a Chigakonkwo, I think could be just a monster in this offense, getting a ton of opportunities. Nick Cross, great at safety, chance to exceed those expectations. Leo Chenal, I think he could be the best out of this entire group. Now, I know Adonfe Owe is going to be there in a $100 million contract, and it's $68 million guaranteed. It's not anything crazy, but... that might be a little bit more of like, the expectations are going to be a little bit higher for him, but you can't go out and spend the money that you did. And I get it. Look, they still got needs. We got questions in the secondary. We got questions at wide receiver, but they're all questions. Those questions could actually have good answers. Like, I get it, right? There's worry and there's concern about some of these spots, and you're going, oh, God, who are they going to throw the ball to after Terry? Antonio Williams is a rookie. I don't know, and De'Ami Brown, and should they bring Noah Brown back even? And we're just throwing around names, Van Jefferson, and it's like, well, you know, what if that offense actually works? See, not every offense necessarily needs to have, though I do think they need more at wide receiver. But there are offenses out there that do maximize the talent that you have at wide receiver, where they're spreading the ball around, and you have success without having this pecking order of your number one wide receiver and your number two. Like, it's not the Dallas Cowboys. It pains me to say it, but they got some talent on offense, right? I mean, I don't know what George Pickens is going to actually do because he wants an extension and they're not giving it to him. But we can't deny the fact that CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens is a nasty combination of wide receiver. Commanders don't have that. They don't. I'm not going on a limb. I think we know that they don't have that. But maybe there's a chance, because we don't know what David Blau's offense really looks like yet. This might be an offense that's just so good at spreading the ball around beyond Terry McLaurin that it's like Terry McLaurin getting his 10 targets that you say he's going to get, and then after that you don't know who is going to be number two, and that's actually an advantage for them. Does Antonio Williams get used out of the slot and in certain situations where you know he's dangerous for 7 or 8 targets a game maybe? Chigakonkwo used that, you know, lined up as a wide receiver at times, and you know he's going to be a red zone threat. He's big, and you know, Van Jefferson is a deep threat. You go down the list of all these names, and there is a chance that that wide receiver room is actually not as bad as we might think it is right now. Now, do I feel confident in it? No, I don't. But all I'm saying is we spend so much time in the doom and gloom side of this thing that maybe there is a chance that with this offense, it's actually the pieces that they need. Now, maybe not long term, because you also got to think. I know you signed Terry McLaurin to an extension, but how long is he going to be there? Wrong side of 30. We know how that goes. It's more for running backs, but it's become a thing for wide receivers too. They're going to have to start adding more to that room. But let's just say, for argument's sake, this year it clicks. It might. And you know that Jaden Daniels is going to, if he's healthy, is going to elevate everybody on that offense. We saw it his rookie year. We did. And he's also a threat as a runner, and you've got a lot of weapons out of the backfield as receivers on top of that. So, if Jaden Daniels is healthy, it's that trickle-down effect all the way across the board here to where you spend all this money in free agency, you can't be a 6 or 7 win team again this year in an NFC that's really, really wide open. Like, who really scared? Who do you look at in the NFC besides the Rams? I put the Rams in their own category. After the Rams, who are we talking about as, like, the biggest threat in the NFC? You could say, well, the 49ers won 12 games. Yeah, but they just got older, and they didn't really have, like, an aggressive offseason either, and they're getting older, and there's a chance that Christian McCaffrey takes a step back at some point. I know he had an elite year last year, but think of the position he plays. Think of the hits and the targets and the injuries that he's had. I mean, that's one. But you could go down the list in the NFC, and you find a lot of different teams that you can at least, yeah, most teams you can poke holes in, but is Philadelphia a team that you look at as the same Eagles team that won a Super Bowl a couple of years ago? I mean, they lose A.J. Brown. I know they went out and got a bunch of receivers, but is that going to replace A.J. Brown? Because guess what? You still got to figure out what Jalen Hurts looks like as a quarterback with all of the stuff that's been said about him this offseason. It's very clear that people are leaking that because they want to use him as a scapegoat if the offense under another offensive coordinator. I mean, if they have problems again, who do you think the scapegoat's going to be if the Eagles' offense struggles again this year like it did last year? There were points last year where the Eagles' offense, they were down a field goal and you went, well, they're going to lose because they can't score. I mean, it was that bad. And I know this because I like to incorporate people from all backgrounds in my life, including Eagles fans, and I have some Eagle fan friends. And they were miserable last year. And I loved seeing it. It was great. But the reality is that offense, not to mention Saquon Barkley. Have we seen the best of Saquon Barkley? I mean, probably. He's not going to have the season he had 2 years ago, but even close to that at this point. Think of the top of the NFC from last year right now. Seahawks, yeah, they won 14 games, but they lost a lot on defense. They lost their offensive coordinator that worked really well with Sam Darnold. So there's big-time questions there. The Bears. Yeah, well, okay. Ben Johnson, year two. Is there more film? Does Caleb Williams take a big jump, or does he still throw the ball like a crazy person sometimes? Just mention the Eagles. Panthers, whatever. They just backed their way into the playoffs. That's its own thing. I still love the Rams more than any other team in the NFC. The 49ers have their questions. The Packers, then, that was the 7th seed last year. The Packers won 9 games. Vikings were 9-8. I mean, Kyler Murray in that offense, I think, could actually be pretty good. I actually look at the Vikings as a potential under Kevin O'Connell and Kyler Murray. Because I think he's starting over J.J. McCarthy. I mean, I think maybe the Vikings could jump a little bit and win double-digit games, but have we seen the best of the Lions? They only won 9 games. Tampa was 8-9 last year. I mean, then there's Atlanta, and there's Dallas, who only won 7, New Orleans, and the Commanders come in at 5. That's going all the way down to the 14th team in the NFC. So there is a path to a lot of teams in the NFC to really take a jump, to really be not even worst to first, right, but a team that makes that major big-time jump. Commanders could go from 5 to 10 wins. Cowboys could go from 7 to 11. They improved defensively this offseason, but it's a lot of young guys still. And we know the Cowboys always cowboy at some point. But are we sure that Brian Schottenheimer is a great head coach? They won 7 games last year. I mean, Dak Prescott does well with him as an offensive-minded coach, but, I mean, are they going to be better defensively? In theory. I just think if you look at the NFC right now, there is so much room for the Commanders to get to a point where they can win 10 games. Because the Eagles are vulnerable. The Cowboys are vulnerable. I mean, just looking at the division, the Giants aren't going to be there yet. Giants have John Harbaugh there for his first year. He's playing I'm captain now and going in and throwing down his iron fist, taking control of things, which he needs to because the Giants have been a mess culture-wise for a while. But like, you go on and spend the money the Commanders did. You can't sit around and think that this is going to be like another bridge year. It's not. You got a lot of people with a lot of pressure. Oh, and by the way, rookie offensive and defensive coordinators, which we're going to continue to talk about throughout the entire season. But, I mean, you take that risk and you hire. Now, David Blau is a little different. It felt like David, I mean, that was a quick hire. Other teams really wanted him, and offensive coordinators are just hired young. Again, they're tech bros, right? You're hiring them super young, and then defensive coordinators, you want the grizzled vet that's seen it all like a pilot. It's just different industries, different ages, and what you value in terms of that hire. But the defense was atrocious last year. Is it really going to be that much better? They've spent money there, but you have those questions. But again, it goes back to the money and the investment that they put in this roster. If they had had an offseason where they weren't doing anything and they were that meme with the stick figure and the poking the stick going, do something, which kind of started off free agency that way, then you got to have a problem. But you'd also have lower expectations. Like, this team was not a 5-win team had they been healthy by NFL standards last year. I mean, if they had been healthy like they were in 2024, I think it's probably a 9-win team maybe next year or last year. I mean, you didn't have the same roster from 2024 that went to an NFC championship game, but you had a lot of guys still there. I mean, they went down that depth chart. And look, I get it, right? Like, we love to do the whole next man up. Yeah, football has injuries. I mean, yeah, to a point. But there's a certain point where you can't be like, I got 4 flat tires. Well, get a spare. Well, you only have 1 spare. You don't have 4 spares. Your depth chart of spare tires in your car only goes to 1. It doesn't go down 4 slots. So there's a certain point where, like, you have your limitations. And the Commanders hit that limit. They hit that wall last year. It was like, they just can't do anything else. It's like watching a team in preseason play out the back half of the season. It was bad. So I mean, you can say, oh, excuse. It's not an excuse. I mean, it's a reason. It doesn't mean that you just say, oh, we'll just do the same thing next year and try again. No, they went out and they added pieces and they added depth. And look, I don't think this Commanders team is going to win 12 games again and go to an NFC Championship game. But a healthy Jaden Daniels playing better and more improved than he was his rookie year, I mean, it gives him an outside chance. Right? At this point, you have to have at least that open mind of like, maybe. Right? Really? Maybe. Because if I told you the night of the draft when Jaden Daniels was drafted that that team was going to win 12 games and go to an NFC Championship game, you would have slapped me in the face and told me I was high. And it might have sounded that way. But it happened. So all I'm saying is that there is an outside chance at least that this team can go to at least a spot that is in the hunt, right? Come playoff time, week 16, week 17, they're in the hunt. Now, again, I know we have higher standards than that, but the reality is that roster was trash last year. Just terrible. They went out and spent money. So, you may like what they did in free agency or you may not like what they did in free agency, but the reality is when you spend that money like they did and you're aggressive like they were, you got to back it up. You have to be able to back that up. Now, that defense, I mean, even with the names that they added, it's probably still a middle-of-the-pack defense at best if we're talking high-end. But again, think about what we had last year. They couldn't tackle. They had nobody that could tackle last year. You can't spend this money and then not have the expectations of, yeah, we got to be at least a fringe playoff team. Again, this is a rebuild. They set the clock back when they won 12 games that first year because then they were like, well, maybe we're not rebuilding. Maybe we can get younger, but also pay Terry McLaurin. I'm telling you, if they won five games in 2024, Terry McLaurin would have been traded. They would not have signed him to that extension. I'm telling you, they would have gotten draft picks. They would have done what so many other teams do. Instead of paying their wide receiver that's hitting 30, they trade him for picks and they move on. That's exactly what they would have done. All right, Marvin's in Landover. He wants to jump on. What's up, Marvin?
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, man.
Look, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not as optimistic as you are, even though I'm very optimistic, which it sounds kind of crazy. I just don't trust Adam Peters as much as other people are trusting him. I think he missed on a bunch of things this offseason. Like, the first thing is, I don't think that they even came close to addressing the cornerback situation. They have a cornerback in Trey Amos, who I really liked. But I don't know if I trust Mikey on the outside. And I know Amik Robinson, at his best, was just average. I thought they could have really went after Tariq Woolen or the guy who was Deshaun Wright to get a real length corner for your boundary corner or, you know, more veteran there. I just think that you have $40-something million still left to spend, and I think that was a real miss. I can talk about the defense for days. You said they'd be middling at best. I'm thinking that's where they are, but I'm never going to be happy with their defensive tackle. I'm not. I'm not a fan of Javon Payne, and I'm not a fan of Javon Kinlaw. Both of them seem to play smaller than their size, and they give up gaps, and then neither one of the two gapper. So, I mean, I'm talking a little technical, but I just don't see a lot of what I would want in, like, my defense, especially at some key positions, defensive tackle and cornerback. Those are the two positions that I just think are, like, subpar. I mean, really subpar. And then the thing last year with Terry, I really didn't like that. When you have good vibes, making a contract dispute with Terry last year, which was ridiculous, that all just kind of, like, snowballed into a really bad situation. So I'm just like, I'm hoping for the best. I'm still a fan all the way through and through. I still think they're going to win every game when I start Sunday morning. So it's like I'm optimistic, but I'm a realist. And I just, there's things I just wish they would have addressed. You know, he had $48 million. Why did Philadelphia end up with Tariq Woolen for 1 year, $12 million? Why do we have to face the guy now? Oh, goodness gracious. So
I appreciate it, Marvin. No, listen, good. And here's what I will say, too. Great call, Marvin. It's like you can operate in two lanes here, right, where you can have the fan side and then, like, the more logical side where you look at the defense and go, they got to raise the floor on that significantly. and have questions with Trey Amos and Mikey Sanders still more on the outside, which I think is a better spot for him, and it seems to be the trend. Here's the one thing I will say about the defense, though. Now that you're going to have a new defensive coordinator, and as of right now, we have no track record with him, obviously, as a defensive coordinator, but if you're able to get a more elevated, it's not just the guys you added, but it's also getting some of the guys on this defense back to where they were, say, 2 years ago. Frankie Louvu is a big one for me. You need more out of Frankie Louvu. Frankie Louvu in 2024 versus Frankie Louvu in 2025, big difference. Frankie Louvu in 2024 was a game wrecker. Frankie Louvu in 2025 was non-existent half the time. Dorrance Armstrong, another guy, if he's healthy. Dorrance Armstrong led this team in sacks a month after he was injured and out for the season. I mean, he still had the most sacks on this defense. So if Dorrance Armstrong is healthy, Frankie Louvu gets back to what you saw a couple of years ago. That's two additions that are already technically on the roster. Now, I'm not saying Frankie Louvu's even going to get back to what he was 2 years ago, but that's part of what the expectation should be, because if you hire a defensive coordinator that you think is going to elevate what you've got there and you keep somebody like Louvu around, you expect more. Now, look, obviously Sonny Styles is the one you hope is going to be like the quarterback of the defense, but he's still going to be a rookie. And the athleticism's there, the football IQ is there, the leadership is there, like you see it, right? And you hope that that's going to be the case. Sonny Styles is one of the guys I wanted them to draft. I want a defense all the way. Everybody that was talking running about was just like, please stop. Jeremiah Love, no, stop. They need as much talent on defense as they can possibly get. But now the expectations are, Sonny Styles, game wrecker, dude. Like, you need to get out there and you need to make plays starting week one. Like, that's the expectation with somebody like a Sonny Styles. Again, Leo Chenal, I think, is somebody, and I know he's changed the way his pronunciation of his name. I'm still doing it. I have to. But, like, that's somebody that I think could elevate his game with more opportunities. He's got 44 career starts at 25 years old in a Super Bowl with the Chiefs. So, like, you're bringing in some of that. Adafi Owe has the expectations that are there because he got the bigger contract. Some people think that that was an overpay. So, look, I think at best the ceiling on this defense is probably middle of the pack. But if you can not only get the best out of the free agents that you brought in, and let's just say the addition, so we add Sonny Styles to the mix there, and then on top of it, you get a better Frankie Louvu and a healthy Dorrance Armstrong getting after the quarterback, just that alone does elevate this defense. And yeah, we do have questions about the secondary, Trey Amos and Mikey Samrasil, for sure. I mean, that was another position they really probably could have drafted in the first round. Look, this defense was devoid of talent. Guys couldn't tackle. It's not all going to be fixed in 1 year. And that's why, really, in the end, it's Jaden Daniels carrying this team offensively first and foremost. I know it sounds simple, but, like, we know how the NFL is, right? We know how the NFL is. Quarterback play dictates everything else. And you can overcome at least a mediocre defense if you've got an elite offense. And when you have an elite quarterback, the trickle-down effect is all the way across the board. But wouldn't it be nice if this defense was actually respectable? Just respectable. I'm not talking top 10. Middle of the pack. So let's call it 16th. 16th in total defense. Respectable against the pass and the run. Middle. I'll take it. Start with that and go from there. Nick Ashew on the Fan.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I'm trying to figure out what all-star game, all-star break kind of still has that luster. We got the All-Star game for baseball literally just getting started right now. Feels like the Home Run Derby's exceeded it. Home Run Derby's kind of, even though they changed the rules, obviously last night it was better with the way they kind of went back to it and timed, and seemed like it was a great reception for at least the event. Everybody's just going to rip Netflix because they have a weird bench on their set and they're trying things differently. Guess what? Netflix is going to Netflix, so you're just going to have to accept it. And that's tough, too. Like, if you're Netflix and you're trying to do things new and different and there is absolutely, like, baseball fans don't like change. So you're always going to have to deal with that. But I don't know. We've gotten to the point now where, like, all-star breaks, all-star games, all-star festivities, gotten a little stale. I'll credit the NBA because the NBA may have figured out their formula for their All-Star game because the biggest thing for them was just making it competitive. Then you had this little round-robin tournament that they tried that first didn't work until it was U.S. versus, you know, world. They made a little tournament, and then there was some bragging rights, and it, you know, became something that was more competitive. So I think maybe, even though we've had 1 year of that, the NBA's maybe figured that out. The All-Star game in baseball is look, everybody's going to try things. Every league is going to try something. Thankfully, they don't make it for a World Series home field advantage anymore. That disaster was...
That was terrible.
Right. That was probably... Out of all of the ideas or all of the things, Metal Chris, that you could try to make an All-Star game more interesting, I feel like that was the worst idea of them all.
I feel that it punished the team that had the best record in the World Series. Because like they had no control over who gets home field or not, even though they had the best series or the best record, you know?
It was so dumb. I mean, it was so dumb. And I mean, it was because they ended in a tie and they were like, well, we got to make this more competitive. The NBA is like, let's do a tournament at least. Baseball is like, let's make it matter for the World Series. It was just so stupid. But that, you know, that's gone at least.
I want to see an exhibition game where they just get a bunch of the players to play against the Savannah Bananas. Like, seriously, have them play by the goofy rules. It'd be cool to see like Bryce Harper and stuff doing that, right? Like,
I don't hate this idea. It'd be fun. And like, now the
not
Savannah
as the
Bananas.
Main All-Star game, but just like one of the little side games. Like, that'd be fun.
I bet you. So honestly, I think at some point you might see that. I really do, because what baseball is going to want to do, they want to get younger and they want to get more, you know, involved with social media. That first off, they got to stop getting pissed off at people for using baseball highlights on social media, guys. This isn't 2014. Like, I don't know what we're doing, but baseball still gets mad at that. But the Savannah Bananas are like building their own league at this point, and it's incredible what they built. So yeah, I actually don't hate that idea. So how about this? I've got an idea here. The winner of the All-Star game. No, even better. We're going to say the loser of the All-Star game then has to play a five-inning exhibition game against the Savannah Bananas the next day.
The pitchers aren't going to do that.
So okay, well, that's
the issue is the pitching. So you'd have to have other players somehow, but
so how do we
at least
work
other
this
pitchers.
Out?
You'd have to have other pitchers somehow.
Because I really want to see Bryce Harper having to like do a dance when he goes up to
the bat. That'd be cool, right? Like. Yeah.
I love the Savannah Bananas. I think it is a brilliant idea.
It would give some personality to some of the players too, you know.
Yes. Like, well, yeah, because like you got people mad at bat flips and celebrations. I've never understood that. And I know it's like eased off a little bit,
just
I feel
like the NFL, their end zone dances. Like, why are you mad about the thing that people enjoy?
The NFL went through the no fun league phase for a while, and it was, I mean, listen, it was still a monster ratings and all that, but like the no touchdown celebrations and how strict they got on it was so dumb. Like, sometimes leagues just can't get out of their own way, and there's different things that every league does that's stupid, or you just look at them and go, what are you doing? The no touchdowns and celebrations, to take emotion out of a game that is emotion-driven is so counterproductive and so close-minded.
You could just tell it's just like some crotchety old guy being like,
yes!
I don't like this. Ah, you know,
I don't like. I mean, listen. All right, so fine. Don't hump the goalpost. Okay, fine. We can, like, there can be some things that you say maybe it's going too far. All right? Like, I don't need someone actually pulling their butt cheeks out and
mooting
the crowd.
Cell phone things were, like, fine. And, like, there's plenty of them that are fine.
Honestly,
like,
the Joe Horn cell phone back in the day was awesome. I personally thought, I know Joe Buck was very outraged because it was a disgusting act, but the Randy Moss mooning the crowd was funny too. It's not like he actually showed his butt cheeks.
Anyway.
It wasn't. He just pretended.
Who cares?
Get over it. You know, the one thing I will say about the NBA is the NBA has really done a good job of just always trying to make their league fun. You may not like all the choices they make, but they try.
No, they do. And like, you go to a game and even like any pause in the game, there's activities going on the court.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're bringing the dancers out, or there's somebody shooting for $1 million, or just like something. There's always something going on. Like,
game operations, like actually at a game, let alone what you see on TV, the NBA has absolutely gone. I mean, really, a lot of it started with the Showtime Lakers. I mean, that's really where that idea sort of exploded, if you really want to go back to the
I'm a Suns fan, and I grew up watching this Phoenix Suns gorilla, and I love that dude, and I will always love that dude. Phoenix Suns gorilla, best mascot of all time.
Well, the 7 seconds or less Suns were a ton of fun to actually watch on the court, too.
Sure, I'm talking back in the Barkley days, though. But
no,
yeah,
I know. But I'm just saying, like, the Suns have had a history of fun teams. It's
for sure.
You know,
but, like, I used to see that guy, like, bungee jump in the middle of the court, like, at halftimes and stuff. Just, like, all kinds of fun stuff, you know?
I love it.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, so, you know, listen, here's the thing. sports are entertainment first. Let's stop pretending that this is a pure game. The pure game is high school. Really, high school. And even then, we can make arguments in some of these great great high school programs that are sending guys to major college programs. Like, again, this is all still a business. Sports is a business. Youth sports is a $1 billion business now. Now, I get it. We don't want to let it go so far in the left field that you're going, what has happened to this game? Like, the Savannah Bananas, you can't make Major League Baseball the Savannah Bananas. But you know what you can make? The Savannah Bananas, their own league, and the Savannah Bananas. And it's fun. But you know that you're getting something that's different. It's like playing Madden versus NFL Blitz. You know NFL Blitz is ridiculous. Madden's supposed to be realistic. NFL Blitz is supposed to be fun. God, it was fun. I love it. They had the mini version of it.
Yeah, that was a fun game. I used to play that too.
Do you remember they had the mini version of it at Costco for a while? Did you ever see that?
No, I used to play it on the GameCube.
Oh, GameCube. Wow. I've not heard that name in a long, long time. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, you expect that. So you can't go so far in the left field that you ruin, like, the true leagues. But you also have to understand that there is a entertainment value that matters to fans, because where's your money coming from? It comes from the networks that are going to pay because people are watching, and it comes from the fans that are going to show up and pay way too much money for everything that they get at the game, whether it's parking or the tickets or the concessions or whatever.
You know, did you ever play the Base Wars baseball game on the old Nintendo?
No, I never played that.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I mean, I remember. That's
the one
kind
with
of
all
before
the robots
my time
playing baseball
video games. Yeah,
and instead of sliding into second to see if they were safe, like you would fight, like the robots would fight to see, like, if you were safe or not. Like,
I vaguely remember that you could if you turn that. So I've always had this thing. Like, we always have these bench clearing brawls where nobody actually fights. I think if you're going to be willing to throw at a batter, you should be able to have a one-on-one fight in the middle of the field. If a pitcher is going to throw at a
like
batter, and the
style,
batter,
you get like
and,
5 seconds.
Yes,
if
yes.
Someone goes down, it's over. Like,
that's what I want. I want you swinging at the pitcher that threw at your head. I think because first off, that is one of the dumbest unwritten rules in baseball, in sports. You know, it's just like this retaliation because, oh, he walked a little too slow after hitting the home run the last time he was up at bat, so the next time I'm going to throw at his head. You know what? Fine. Then he gets to swing at your head with his fist. And I know that's unpopular, and I don't care, because I hate that. I think it's so lame and so sensitive and stupid. It's like, oh, it's accepted that he can throw at his head, but you can't go and you can't show any emotion or maybe a little bit of arrogance after hitting a home run. Don't give up a home run. I mean, really. Like, taking the emotion out of sports is just, it's the worst. AL and NL are scoreless in the first two outs in that. Nick Ashew on the Fan.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Ashew on the Fan. AL going up 2-0 now on the NL. We're two outs in the first, top of the first, and there you go. Now the AL takes the lead. But don't worry. It's not like it's going to guarantee the AL to have home field advantage in the World Series. I know it was a long time ago, but you
remember
still
that year the
it.
Commissioner was there and called it a tie.
Yeah, and that was what started it, right?
Yeah,
I mean that Bud Selig started it and realized, like, we got to make it more meaningful. So let's go ahead and make it matter for the World Series. You're like, what are you doing? How long did that last? Do you remember, like, how many years that actually was?
Like it was like 10.
Feels like a question for AI. I need to ask that. Felt like it was probably.
I'm sure they'll give us a 66% right answer.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, listen, this depends on what you're doing. You're not always going to get the right answer, but it ain't going anywhere, to say the least. Oh, and make it 3-0 now. 3-0 AL over the National League. So there you go. Yeah, look, I mean, I'm thinking about this metal course more and more. Like, I keep thinking about the Savannah Bananas getting involved in one of these. Like, I think it's going to happen at some point. I want to see real major leaguers playing against those guys. I know that will never happen, but I'd love to see it. I really would.
Oh, I mean, 3-16, by the way, is the answer.
What's that?
It was 2003-16.
Wow, it was 13 years?
Yeah, 14, yeah.
Or 14, well, technically 16.
14 times, apparently, they did it.
Yeah. That's way too long. That's way too long. Oh, my gosh. 2003 to 2016. Jeez. You know, the NBA loves to move fast. Baseball used to move slow. Now, obviously, Rob Manfred has changed that. He's kind of been the polar opposite. It's funny because, like, the NFL, I mean, it's different. The NFL can just kind of say, F you, we do what we want, and they get away with it. The NFL doesn't move quickly in terms of change much either. You know, now they'll change the rules and certain things. We try to figure out what a catch is or what a pass interference is or things like that. But, you know, the NFL is kind of in its own category where they're so big, they're so popular, they're so powerful. They don't really have to make massive, massive changes. Like, they got away with being the no-fun league. They got away with penalizing for basic touchdown celebrations for the longest time. I was kind of surprised when they actually went back and said, nah, we'll loosen the rules on that a lot. I mean, to me, I was like, they can kind of do whatever they want. Though it will be interesting to see what happens. Because the NFL is starting to get too big for these networks. And they want so much money. And there's reports they want to go to NBC and say, you're paying the NBA $1.2 billion? Well, we're going to pay you. We want to get more than that, even though it's one game a week versus multiple games for NBC and all that. Like, you're going to get to a point if you're the NFL where, yeah, you're big. Yeah, you're popular. Yeah, you're important. Yeah, you get big ratings. But who's going to be able to pay what you actually want? These media companies, legacy media companies, right, the old school, the NBC and the ESPN, the ones that have been around forever, that aren't in the position that they used to be in, it's going to be real tough for them to still justify paying the $2 billion or whatever it's going to get to, depending on the package that the NFL wants. Then the NFL is going to go to Netflix and YouTube and be like, hey, why don't you pay us? And they're going to go, how much? No, we're not going to pay you $3 billion. We don't need to. Because here's the thing. Traditional TV networks where everybody wants to see their games and is, you know, hates how it's gone to all these digital platforms and all that, like a Netflix and a Prime. And these old media companies that have been around forever need the NFL. Netflix doesn't need the NFL. YouTube doesn't need the NFL. And you may say YouTube, but let me tell you something. YouTube is the most watched platform for video in the entire country. It's bigger than Netflix. YouTube is the king. You can watch real TV on it. You can do everything. And I'm not even talking YouTube TV. I'm talking YouTube, yes. Promise you, I study this stuff. This is what I do. YouTube is the king. But they don't need it. YouTube is that popular without... And now they've had, you know, obviously some international games, and they've got the... partially have the NFL package with YouTube TV. But, like, if you think it's frustrating now to maybe find a game or whatever the sport is and where it is and through this whole transition that sports media is going through, it's going to get more complicated. But at what point is the NFL actually pricing themselves out of deals? Because at some point, Netflix will just be like, nah, it's too much. We'll just make another season of Stranger Things. Right? I know they wrapped it up, but I'm just saying. Prime, it's Amazon. They've got a lot of other ventures that they're pretty successful at, and there are some very large revenue streams that are coming in to where they don't necessarily need to pay past a certain point for the NFL. Now, I'm not saying they won't, because obviously they're interested, and Netflix for the longest time was like, you know, we're just good with binging, and now they realize, oh, we need live.
Sometimes I think they want the sports just so, like, other services don't have it.
Netflix?
Any of them. YouTube, yeah. Whoever, they're like, well, yeah, we have it. They're... That means someone else doesn't, because we have the exclusive right,
yes.
And it's not even about... This is going to be our highest viewership. It's just taking away options from your competitors.
It's signing a free agent just so they don't go to your rival.
Exactly.
Same idea. Yeah, I think that's a great point, and it's really true. Now, I will say this. Netflix is considering live TV also. Get ready for that. They've been testing it in other countries because, again, the one thing that always wins with sports is that it's live and it's appointment viewing. What else does anybody watch when it's on live in the moment? The last show that really had everybody sitting down to watch it when it was live and it was on and you were live tweeting it was probably the original Game of Thrones. I can't think of another show.
No, there's like Saturday Night Live. There's a few. Like,
no, SNL's dead.
No,
come
there's
on.
Still like you know if it's Saturday night and you're sitting around, you turn it on. Like,
but it's not appointment. Like everybody sits and watches it like it used to be back in the day for like Friends or something.
I'll tell you, Saturday Night Live has up and downs over the years. Every night, and then something goes viral and everyone starts watching it again and like you know.
See, you must be... Do you watch it?
Sometimes. I can't
tell you the last time I've watched
it. I will tell you this. I tend to record it and every week, and then if I am bored and nothing to watch, I can always turn it on, and if it If I don't, then I don't. It doesn't matter, you know?
I mean, for me, it's clip. Like, I mean, I'll see clips on social media, and that's as far as it goes. But, again, like, some of it, I understand that not everybody is that way, but I'm talking the majority at this point. I mean,
I think local news is another one, too. People watch the news regularly at a certain time.
But that's a generational thing, too.
Sure.
Gen Z's not doing that. Millennials, we're not really doing that like we used to. I mean, it's changed.
But people do want to see the local news. You know, I'm not just talking, because there's 24-hour national news. You can find
right.
all that stuff whenever. But, like, if you want to see, like, hey, what's going on in my town, you know?
Oh, I mean, listen.
Evening news.
It is not that it doesn't exist anymore. It's just not what it used to be. But, like, the whole point that I was going to with this, really, like, going back to all that, is just that, like, there is a certain point where the NFL, it's so popular because it's something that the numbers are there. It's the most popular TV show that, like, people will sit and watch.
Some of those reality shows, too, like, the Love Islands and the
But I think a lot of that, most people are just going to watch on demand, or they're going to, you know, they'll just watch it on Peacock or,
some
you
of those
know.
Are big enough followings, though, that it's like you have a party and everyone comes over and y'all watch it.
That's fair. Oh, you know, actually, I'll give you one, Dancing with the Stars, but that's also, like, live. So, you know
what I
mean? Like,
also, like, in a way, a sport. Like, there's a contestant, competition part of it as well,
But going back to it, it's live, and obviously live news, like national news or like big political events, debates and all that are obviously, but that's an event, right? It's live. So, like, if it's not live, sports, politics, competition, like Dancing with the Stars, whatever, it's always, we don't have that like scripted show that people will all sit and watch like they used to. It just doesn't.
Seinfeld or whatever.
Yeah, you don't have that anymore. You know, you don't have the like Thursday night at 9. I'm watching The Office. Was The Office on at 9? I don't remember what time it was on NBC. But like, you just don't have that anymore. It's just because everybody can get it when they want to watch it, and that's never going to change. But that's what makes sports so unique, is that you have that ability for everybody to say like, oh, that's on now. Now, granted, people can watch it delayed. My dad can watch a Commanders game like an hour late so he can fast forward through the commercials. I'm like, Dad, how do you do this? I know it's not live, and it drives me insane. Now I'm on social media and react.
I got a couple of friends that do that too, and they'll be like in the text chain, like, don't spoil stuff. I'm like, get out of the text chain.
Oh, like, I'm 100% with you on that.
Me, it's on you, bud.
Like, 100% with you on that. Like, this isn't a movie that just came out. Sorry, it's a live game. If you're going to be in a text chain, you better put your phone down and catch up.
Part of the experience of modern sports is, too, like, even if you're not watching with your friends, we can all text each other, and you kind of are watching with your friends.
Yes,
you know?
You're reacting. Like, you're reacting with
everybody. But you're all, oh, my God, you see that player? I can't, of course, this is going to happen, or whatever, you know? But you can watch it even when you're not in the same room, which that's not really how we consumed sports 20 years ago.
Which
is
what made Prime Twitter great, too, right? It was another giant group chat for everybody. During games. And now it's there, but it's not what it used to be.
Elon Twitter is not the same.
No, it's not. It's not the same at all. And that was his goal, was to completely change it. So there you go. But, still 3-0. Bottom of the first, two outs. AL up over the NL. Nick Ashew on the Fan. What are we still at? 3-0. Oh, great. All right. There you go. So we got that. You're right. CJ Abrams is up to bat. I can't wait till the Nats have a bunch of All-Stars. No, really. Like, it feels like it's been 100 years since that World Series in 2019. I got some cool memorabilia sitting behind me on this. I got a Juan Soto bobblehead. Remember when he dropped the bat all the way at first base? Game 6? It was so cool.
Remember all the Baby Shark stuff?
Oh, you know what? I hated Baby Shark and the dumb song, but I miss it now. The nostalgia just, like, it gets you, you know? I miss it. Like, I miss the Nats being a team that you actually thought had a chance to go to the World Series. Even with the letdowns for years before 2019 when they won. You know, it was just, there was always at least that hope that was there. Now, don't get me wrong. I get it. The Nats are overachieving. A little bit of a rough stretch before the All-Star break. But, you know, this is a team that is at least, you're at least watching with the arrow trending up. But it's just been years and years. I mean, really, think about it. 2019, they win the World Series. 2020, well, the world shuts down, and then they're playing 62 games, and everybody's hurt, and the season was meaningless. Meaningless. Didn't even get a chance to actually be the defending World Series champs. I mean, you did, but you didn't really get to be that way with the Nats. And now,
yeah, they got kind of robbed.
Right, they got robbed of that experience. I mean, we all got robbed of experiences in 2020, let's be honest. And then, you know, after that, They basically got the roster and they sell. And by the way, that was the right move at that point to sell and get the prospects that they did and go down. The problem was is then they were trading away the prospects that they traded for that were part of the rebuild. So it's like you never, it was just a perpetual rebuild year after year after year. And you just go, like, what's the plan here? And I think that's the difference between where the Wizards are and where the Nats have been for so long is you can't keep just spinning your tires in the mud and expecting people to think there's going to be any forward momentum. We're watching, like we're seeing, you're not moving. You're not doing anything. The Wizards were, and that's part of the reason why they also, you know, paid Trae Young. They paid, Abrams just strikes out, yes, at the end of the first. So it's still 3-0 AL, the end of the first inning there. You know, you get to this point where you say, like, people don't believe you anymore. They don't. Oh, you're rebuilding? What's the plan? What's it look like? And that's why the Wizards paid Trae Young what they did. And that's why, you know, they have Anthony Davis, and maybe they do pay him. And it's, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't. But yeah, it's going
to
be expensive.
I tend to think the learners are kind of waiting for a new CBA before they really spend anything.
And that's the thing. When you have, you're held hostage by cheap ownership, what are you going to do? I mean, the learners are just sitting on this, and they've been doing this for years. And that's the hard part. It's like you sit and you watch and go, okay, so like, what's the point? What's the point of this? It's always going to have a lower ceiling. And listen, when Mike Rizzo was here, I mean, it was already – I mean, he had enough to deal with where he couldn't really spend on a bullpen like he wanted to. Or he was always kind of building that team with one hand tied behind his back. Now they spent on starting pitching, and I get it. It's not like they didn't spend, but – you know, it would have helped if Steven Strasburg actually stayed healthy a little bit longer. I mean, think about that. He had one healthy season, gets paid after the World Series, and then what was it, 18 total innings and he pitched? And that was it? I mean,
I'm not going to give Stras nothing. Like, come on, he did what he could in that World Series run, man.
No, I understand that, but what I'm saying is after that was it. Like, you think about how everything fell off after that World Series.
No, I know. And
everything.
I know.
Again, like, the injuries are injuries. That's not even a knock on him in that sense because, look, some guys just can't help it, right? Their bodies just don't hold up.
It's like watching an old band and their singer just, they're just old and they cannot hit those notes anymore.
Oh, yes,
just,
we're, you know, still here rocking metal, yeah. Chris, you know?
Yeah, they're not going to hit the high notes, though.
No, definitely not. But they're still out there trying, doing what they can. But, yeah, it's just been... I mean, it's been a long time. It's 7 years now. It's a long time since they won that World Series. And you get to this point where you just kind of feels like it's always going to be that way. So I would just be great. It would be great to see the Nats in a position where we're starting to talk about them, just at least as a continuous, like a team that's in the playoff picture every single year. Let's start there, and we'll go from that. Still 3-0, top of the second, no outs. AL over the NL. Nick Cashew on The Fan.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.